1045 The Zone. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Paul, look at the time. Second half of the show is here.
Just like that. Yeet!
We have Michael Kist, who is going to join us in 15 minutes for a couple of segments via Skype, where we'll discuss the NFL draft and some of his analysis. The focus today will be on some of the players beyond round one out of the SEC, and then we'll move to the Big Ten if we have time, and some of the players he's really enjoyed grading film on throughout this process from teams that you've certainly watched throughout the college football season. 615-737-1045, our number. Chad, coming up at 1 o'clock, explain what we have going on.
Coming up at 1 o'clock, we are going to continue our discussion that we started to start the show today, where we are giving you 16 different pill options. We're giving you your medicine. You can choose three of these pills, numbered 1 through 16. All of these pills represent a different sports hypothetical in the state of Tennessee that you want to see happen. Examples: Tennessee beats Alabama. The Predators beat the Penguins in the Stanley Cup Final. Kevin Dyson scores. The Penguins.
Penguins. Start to say Penguins.
Penguins, I think, is what,
Penguins, that's it.
Penguins, what it developed into. Lots of different scenarios there. Vandy fully investing in sports. Just some of the examples. We'll go through again all of your choices, and we will have a full-on discussion of the pick of three that we want to go with, and we'll give you our rationale, and also we'll take calls from everyone out there for the entire 1 o'clock hour discussion. It's got a huge reaction going on right now on Twitter, on Instagram. I think you can hit us up also on Facebook possibly. Let us know what you think about it, getting a lot of votes in. And we can kind of share with you, I don't have the exact numbers, but just judging by what I'm seeing, there are two or three that are sort of the runaway that's in almost every answer in terms of the pill number. So we'll share those with you as well.
615-737-1045, our number, if you'd like to join the discussion now, and you can chime in there. Paul had just took Brody out briefly. The weather is great, and it made me think, you know, the Orioles and Yankees would be playing right now.
Sad. I think actually they wouldn't have started until 2:05, but if you want to give us a head start, Yanks are up 3-0.
I'm telling you, the Orioles win in March. Don't downplay Baltimore's ability to win this month.
You love the earlier start to the season.
Yeah. March and April by May. Yeah, the season's done. Mathematically eliminated by May in Baltimore.
They're like the Duke or Villanova of Major League Baseball. They always win in March.
Yes.
That's their claim to fame.
The trouble is, it's the beginning, not the end. Yeah.
They're the UConn women's basketball of Major League Baseball in terms of their ability to win in March.
David, give us the latest COVID-19 update from the local perspective.
So earlier today, the stats that came out from the Nashville Metro Health Department, 36 confirmed new cases of COVID-19 in Davidson County over the past 24 hours. That brings the total cases in Davidson County to 293. Still only one fatality from the outbreak here in Nashville. 12 people do remain hospitalized, and now reporting that 52 have recovered from the virus. The emphasis on social distancing is still out there. Reminder that Metro parks have closed playgrounds, dog parks, basketball courts, tennis courts, picnic areas, and skate parks. The trail systems, the greenways, and golf courses do remain open, but the clubhouses are closed. And they are now directing anyone who may have questions about the COVID-19 outbreak to a brand new hotline that's been set up by the Nashville Public Health Organization. That number is 615-862-7777. Again, that's 615-862-7777, and that is open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
A lot of good info there from David Reed, and we'll continue to keep you updated on all the updates that are out there locally with COVID-19 and the response and what's going on with that. I would like people to keep in mind, this has been going on for, 2 weeks now, a few weeks here in Nashville and Middle Tennessee. 6 deaths from this, which you hate to see anyone die. But just a reminder that 24 people died in the tornado that ripped through this state in one night. And we're talking about six deaths in a number of weeks right now. So I'm not saying that to downplay COVID-19 at all. But what I'm saying that to remind people that there are still people dealing with loss of life from that tornado, and a lot of people who are alive that are dealing with loss of home, a lot of businesses that are dealing with complete loss of business right now and a place to do business. So when this ends, and I pray that it's sooner rather than later, that we can all get through this and we return to our normal daily lives and routines, let's keep in mind that there's going to be people out there still struggling from this tornado, because a story this big that takes over the world completely knocks off a story that was enormous here locally that we have all completely forgotten about. So if I'm going to do anything on this show once a week, I want to give a reminder to everyone out there that there was a horrific tornado that ripped through this area not so long ago, and there are going to be people struggling with that when we return to our daily lives. Keep them in mind, and if you want to get back to volunteering once it's safe and once we're not supposed to stay separated from each other, let's get back to doing that the moment we're allowed.
Well said.
If you're listening on the app or however you're listening today, you can take a screenshot of that and tweet it to us at Midday180, and you're qualified to win an Edley's gift card from Edley's Barbecue. Whenever you're listening, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays, we'll be selecting. Jim, he sends in and lets us know that he had takeout last night from Edley's in 12 South. Place was busy. Food was excellent. He says, thanks to Edley's for serving the community. Joe on Twitter mentions he's been listening via podcast because he and his wife have turned into high school and elementary school teachers during the day. Bill is listening on the app on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington. Thank you, Bill. And Ronnie is listening via the app as well. Very cool to see this.
Terrific. Do you guys think that we should retweet the pills? I always find that retweeting between 12 and 1, it's very standard lunch hour for a lot of people, even on the crazy schedules that we're on now. And a higher percentage of people are scrolling Twitter between 12 and 1. And then I find between after 7 o'clock at night. I think I would vote for another tweet of the pill graphic now or in the next 45 minutes before we get to our 1 o'clock in depth.
Do we really have to have a vote on that? Just tweet it out.
Okay.
Well, let's do it.
I just thought maybe you think it was overkill.
Paul, I give you executive power. I mean, we're tweeting that out right now. I trust you and your decision making well enough to do it.
I just thought maybe you thought it was overkill.
No, we could talk
about retweeting it so people go, oh, I'm going to look for it.
It's available at Midday180 through Twitter, through Instagram, Facebook.
May I make another public plea with everyone listening right now? So no one's in any sort of routine right now. I mean, everything is out of whack. People's listening routines are different with this show, with other shows. We completely understand that. It's a reality everywhere in this country right now that no one's really doing what they normally would be doing during the middle of the day. So we understand that. But with that, we may lose a couple of our regular listeners right now because they're doing something else. They're not in the routine. We also may be gaining a few people that are listening because they're in a different routine. So we want to welcome them aboard. And we also want to tell the people that may be just tuning into the Midday 180 for the first time, make us a part of your daily routine when you return. Whatever that routine is, I don't care if it's working from home and you've always been working from home and you decide to listen because you like our updates with COVID-19 and the information we're bringing, or you like the entertainment that we bring. Whatever your reason for joining the show now, make us a part of your daily routine. And for those that are off their daily routine and maybe not being able to listen as much as they normally would, please return to your routines. When this thing is lifted and we're out and about working again, make sure you make us a part of your routine as well. That is my plea to anyone listening right now, to anyone who can hear us. Please do that.
Dane has been listening in work while he drives around in the truck all day. Mike Barnett is sitting poolside today, enjoying the weather. Thank you, Mike. He's got a screenshot of the 104.5 The Zone website pulled up. You can do the same. Send it to us at Midday 180 on Twitter. You're qualified to win an Edley's gift card. We will mail that to you. You'll have it by the end of the week. And you can also qualify by emailing us, midday180@1045thezone.com. Time to talk some NFL draft. Michael Kiss, the Midday 180 NFL draft analyst winner from a couple of years ago with our competition. He's excellent. He was great last week. He returns next on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 1045 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone with Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Koharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro, and we are joined via the magic of Skype with Michael Kist, who joined us last week with a beautiful-sounding microphone that David Reed said it was far superior to anything we were using. And fast forward 7 days, and we all have the same microphone that Michael Kist is currently using. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm glad I could help you guys out, make this transition in these difficult times. So we got that going for us, man. I'm just happy to be here talking some football, giving these people, the fine, gentle listeners, a nice distraction from what's going on.
And, how does it feel to be someone who started an audio revolution, Michael? Yeah.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard that, I'd have exactly one nickel, but I appreciate it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, one of our morning show hosts has finally figured out how to broadcast remotely at all. Never mind having a fancy mic.
It's a challenge.
Hopefully he's napping challenge. Now and I won't get a phone call, but.
Oh, don't worry, Paul. No one will say anything on air or call you about anything you say about the other shows. No, don't you worry about that. If I say anything, no, I'm sure a couple of hosts will say something later on, but not you. Don't worry about you.
One of the two. No one will say anything to you, Paul. No, about me.
Michael Kiss with BleedingGreenNation.com, and he is the Midday 180 draft analyst winner from 2 years ago. He was excellent then, was excellent last week, and he rejoins us now. So we take a focus on the SEC and the Big Ten. Just chose those conferences because the majority of our listeners, Michael, will have paid attention to the schools we'll mention and will probably recognize several names, if not all. And we'll start in the SEC, Paul. We go to LSU and the national champs.
Yeah, so I'm curious about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The Titans need definitely a third down back who could pick up blitzes and catch passes, but also a guy who could potentially take over for Derrick Henry as soon as next year or 2 years out. Wondering what you think of him with those parameters set forth and if he might be there for them in the second round rather than at 29.
Yeah, I think he's definitely in play at the second round. I mean, this guy it obviously fits the Titans. He's a bowling ball, 5'7", 207. And look, I don't care that he ran 4.6 flat. His 10-yard split checked the box. He jumped 39.5 inches in the vert. He's got plenty of juice to run through smoke at the first and second level. And the man has insane contact balance, reactive quickness. He's got that low center of gravity with the play strength to boot, and he just melts contact like butter on a cast iron pan. This guy had over 1,800 yards as a junior, almost 500 of them coming as a receiver. He's also got work as a returner, so he is a complete three-down back that you're looking for, Paul. And while there are like more exciting guys from a pure speed perspective, maybe like a Jonathan Taylor, guys that will go higher than him, I think Edwards-Helaire is going to have a long and productive career, and it's going to start year one for whoever selects him. I love the fit with Tennessee Titans.
Michael Kist with us as we go through some day two selections. That's the emphasis here from the SEC and the Big Ten. A guy who may be a day one selection is wide receiver Justin Jefferson. But while we're talking LSU, let's mention him because he could slide into day two. Who knows? And he is a slot receiver who knows his role and plays his role very well.
Yeah, he led the nation in slot yards, slot receptions. My problem with it is, how much do you value that when you really look at the whole picture? Because this is a guy who's quite often getting free releases into open voids. His average depth of target is quite low compared to the class. Jamar Chase is out there, probably going to be wide receiver one, the preemptive wide receiver one going into next year, getting all the attention from the defensive coordinators and defensive backs going up against them. So I really wonder how he works against press. He struggled with it in 2018 when he had more outside reps. So I'm wondering how you value that. And kind of how I see it and put it into context is Juju Smith-Schuster had a fantastic rookie campaign with AB taking attention away from him, getting a lot of manufactured touches, easy touches from the slot. But then he really struggled when he was forced to the outside, didn't have that attention being taken away by AB. And I think the same kind of struggles and success could work and also work against Justin Jefferson at the next level. That's why I don't necessarily value him in the first round. His testing is quite enticing. I get it. Body control, hands, all that. He does everything well. I just don't know if I value it in the first round. But in the second round, I think it's going to be a high volume target for you that can produce right away. And that's attractive in its own right.
Michael, so much talent on that Mississippi State defense the last couple of years. An incredible amount of NFL talent. Willie Gay Jr., another one of those players, very talented, very productive for Mississippi State. What do you think about him as a day two prospect?
Yeah, the biggest part of Gay's evaluation for teams was always going to be regarding his off-field concerns. And people really didn't start paying attention to Gay until like the combine because of those concerns. But he goes to Indy. He tests extremely well, right? Like 4.46 40 at 243 pounds. He can move 39.5 inch on the vert, 11 foot broad jump. That's 99th percentile. So he checks the athletic box. But most importantly, if we believe Daniel Jeremiah and what he said when he talked with teams, he also aced the interview portion of the process, which for a guy with suspension and all the negative PR attached to his name, that is massive. That vaults him from the day three discussion into the round two discussion. Because like I said, good film, great athlete, and he can really cover well, which is extremely valuable for him. So it's a story of checking boxes for Gay, and if what we're hearing is true, he made himself a lot of money throughout this process, so he should go pretty high.
Michael Kiss with us on Twitter, at Michael Kiss NFL. Michael, if not for the injury history of Terrell Lewis, the edge rusher out of Alabama, are we even talking about him potentially being a day two selection?
Right. I think with some experience and the ability to produce, that you look at the traits on film that he has. I mean, this is 6'5", 262 with 33 7/8 inch arms. Those measurements are all 93rd percentile or better. You love that as a defensive line coach. You want to develop that. I think his first step explosiveness really shows up in his jumps, 37 in the vert, over 10 feet in the broad. So, yeah, I think the problem is he lost a ton of time in college due to an upper arm injury. And I think he had a torn ACL in the summer of 2018. So you are taking a bit of a gamble, but with a guy that turns just 22 years old this August, with his athleticism, his build, it's a gamble that becomes progressively more attractive as you begin to work your way through day two of the draft. So I agree. If he had had more opportunities, unfortunately, the injuries robbed him of that. I think we would be talking about him a lot higher in this class, thus he's kind of forgotten. That's how you get value. You take a swing on that guy in day two.
There are plenty of corners to choose from in this draft and plenty of corners with size, length and size. I'm curious, is that why you have listed Noah Igbinoghene as a potential second round day two pick? Because he's 5'10". But the one thing you can't question is his aggressive mentality and the confidence level that he plays with, because that's easy to pick up on when you watch him play at Auburn.
Yeah, he's got definite swagger. And I was really surprised when Igbinoghene declared, because I thought, you know, with another year of seasoning, that he had the potential to be a top 15 pick. The reason he needed that experience was because he played wide receiver in 2017. So he's only got 2 years at corner. And so he's a bit raw, and there's a lack of ball production there, that you don't love. But what you do love is his athleticism. I mean, he's the son of two unbelievable athletes. His mother won a bronze medal for Nigeria in 1992 on the relay team. Like, I think Igbinoghene has got a cathedral ceiling, and all he needs is the right coach to help him on the pilgrimage to Vatican City. I think you take him in round two. If you've got depth at the cornerback position, you have the ability to develop a guy, and you take him in round two and you watch him blossom, because there's a lot to work with there.
Coming up, some players to watch day two that Michael Kist really enjoyed breaking down the film on, from Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Penn State, and more. That's all straight ahead. Michael Kist joins us. We're talking NFL draft with the Midday 180's draft analyst. We're queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Michael Kiss from Bleeding Green Nation joins us. He is the Midday 180's draft analyst competition winner from 2018, and he joins us. Joined us last week on Thursday. Joins us again this week. Maybe we make this a weekly visit via Skype. That would be really cool, especially during this time as we lead up to the NFL draft. And focusing this week on just players that, Michael has enjoyed breaking down film on throughout this process for early day two selections of the draft as the analysts project where these guys may fall on the overall projection list. And we focus on the SEC. We move to the Big Ten. And Penn State wide receiver K.J. Hamler, Michael, is another slot player who has the potential to be an impact player his rookie season.
Yeah, he's interesting because there are knocks against him, and that's why we're not talking about him in the round one conversation, probably, because he's super tiny. And, you know, he's going to have long-term durability concerns, possibly, and he's going to have to deal with he can't really deal with press and physicality as much. But this guy's play speed, when you watch him on film, you know, Ruggs is fast, Rager's fast. You got all these different fast guys in the class. Hamler's fast, but he jumps off the screen with his play speed. He eats cushion consistently more than I've seen from anybody else in this class. And you put on the Michigan game, he toasted the same guy who had a 10-yard cushion like 3-4 times. It was bad. That guy was way outmatched. They have like this ISO post where they basically tell him, we don't care where you break off your post, get on his heels, because as soon as he has to turn from his back pedal, you're gone. And that's what Hamler brings to your offense. You have to respect that deep speed. I think the other thing that knocks him out of that first round discussion, too many drops last year. I think he had a drop rate of like 17%. There's some body catching issues and whatnot. But if he can figure that out, you have a serious deep threat there. It's a deep wide receiver class. You might be able to get him at a bargain. I like what he is able to bring as a threat to your offense.
Sticking with Big Ten players, Cesar Ruiz, an interior offensive lineman for Michigan, he's a guy who's getting some first-round projections, very tail end of the first round, but also high probability he may be there in the second round and on day two. What do you make of him as a prospect? Is he a plug-and-play type interior offensive lineman for whoever drafts him?
Yeah, I think he is, and I think that's why you're getting in that fringe discussion. Maybe goes later in round one, definitely goes early, you know, sometime around round two. This guy is a dancer. Really athletic on film with great feet. I think he dropped some bad weight for the combine, and it really showed up in his testing. He tested well. I think he's scheme agnostic too, so he's not just limited to gap or zone. He can do both, which helps his stock, and that's thanks to a really impressive mix of traits. And on top of that, guy's got a big old brain ball on him with a ton of starts to his name, so he's very experienced, very smart. I mean, he wins early in reps with his quickness and technique, which is important if he's going to play at that lower weight. That'll help him from getting his anchor stressed too much. It reminds me kind of like Jason Kelce, not the biggest guy, can struggle to take on big power guys sometimes, but he wins early with quickness and technique, and I think Ruiz does the same thing. I think he could play guard or center too, but with a slight lack of length, I think you draft him at center and let him do his thing for the next decade. I really like him and his versatility that he brings and the intelligence he brings.
Zach Bond from Wisconsin, maybe not an eye-popping guy, but seems maybe efficient as a edge rusher. I'm very curious. Educate me, please.
Yeah, so you get 12.5 sacks and 19.5 tackles for loss in a season, and you at the very least have my attention, right? And for Baum, I think his film is fantastic to boot, and he shows not only the short area get off, but at 6'2", 238, his ability to flip his hips on the move is really impressive. Now, the question is, where do you play him? Because I think he's a little too light right now to be a full-time edge. Maybe you put some pounds on, you put him out there, but he's so proficient as a pass rusher that either way, I think you have to get him in at least some nickel package reps, hand in the dirt, let him go, you know, get the passer. I think that's in the cards for him. Ultimately, I do think he's an off-ball linebacker, and I think that's the best spot for him. And at linebacker, like his 1.54 10-yard split is 99th percentile. Dude can go. But you're definitely going to utilize this guy when you're attacking. But either way, Bond is a stud. He's technically proficient. He can bend the edge. He can cover. He can do a lot of these different things. He's a guy that I think lands in the second round, but I wouldn't bat an eye if a team wants to take him in round one if they have a clear plan on how they want to utilize his skill set.
Ohio State cornerback Damon Arnett, a 3-year starter for the Buckeyes. And like Igbinigbini, he's a guy who gets after it. Another feisty corner. What's pushing him down, though, on the boards?
Yeah, there were a lot of film guys that I know that really loved Arnett's tape, and I was one of them, admittedly. But I think he's got some concerns that will push him out of round one, because you've got a corner that thrives in press, but then his arms measure in at only 30 inches. So you're thinking, okay, that's fine. As long as I can trust him to turn and carry speed down the field, and then he runs a 4.56. So it was all kind of very underwhelming at that point. And it's really hard to know what to do with that when you're projecting the guy in the NFL, despite giving him a really nice film grade. But at a certain point, you get to like a evaluation versus evaluation standpoint where you throw it out and say, all right, I'm going to trust my eyes and get my guy because this has gone on long enough. This fall has gone on long enough. And I think as you get into the end of round two, early round three, that's where I can justify, or I can't justify passing on him any longer, as long as he passes the interviews, which were important for him as well. So there's a lot going on with Arnett to be concerned about, but ultimately the guy can play. Like you said, he's feisty. I think he's a good football player.
Finally, Josh Uche from Michigan, edge player. Is he more than just a situational role player for a team?
Yeah, I think he is, and some people might project him to linebackers. Some people might project him to edge, but he's another undersized guy, kind of like Bond. You're trying to figure out exactly how you want to use him. I think as a pass rusher, definitely early in his career, he's a situational guy, but then kind of can develop into a more long-term role. What I really like about him is he recognizes the fact that he is undersized, and he understands, like, I've got this great get-off, I've got this great bend. Okay, but tackles are going to figure that out eventually, and you're not going to make a living in the NFL too long if that's all you can do. So what he really did last season, he talked about this with me at the Senior Bowl, is like, I need to work on my speed to power. And that's something that you saw him develop. Longer guy, but has great length, and really developed that and really developed his counters and tool set so he could be more than just a one trick pony. Even though he's undersized, he works that speed to power real well, works those inside counters. Now, I'm not sure if he can cover, and that's a bit hazy part of the projection there. But if I'm sending this guy after the passer, I think you're going to be making money. So situational rusher early in his career, and then you develop some play strength, some functional play strength, keep working on his counters and whatnot. And I think you got a doggone good football player.
How concerned are you, Michael, with the workload of a running back like Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin coming into the draft?
Yeah, I think when you look around the league and you see the contracts that have been given out to these workhorse backs and whatnot and how that eventually works out, Todd Gurley is what is he, 25? And we're talking about, like, he might be toast. David Johnson was one of the best backs in the league. He might be toast. Le'Veon Bell, what's he up to? Like, I really am concerned with that high workload, because you get to 1,000 carries or whatever it is, you start to get concerned. Now, Christian McCaffrey, you can point to him as an outlier because he had so many carries at Stanford, so many touches and whatnot in Carolina, and he's held up. But to me, he's the exception to the rule. Now, I'm also not in the camp of you need to give a new contract to a running back, right? So you can live with that if your plan is, okay, 3-4 years, maybe a fifth year, and then we're out of there. I just don't think that's something that you can project confidently over 6, 7, 8 years. So that second contract is out of it for me when you're thinking about drafting a running back.
We've all been binging Tiger King. What are you binging now? Because you've completed it just like Chad and I have.
Yeah, Tiger King is amazing. The other things that I'm binging is Vikings. I'm a big history fan. I was telling you guys, off the air and whatnot, I read a lot of Viking history as well. Hopefully I get to talk with Mike Leach about that soon. I know that's a big plus for him. So I'm through 5 seasons of Vikings, thinking about going to season 6. So that's what I'm working on now.
A suggestion if you have HBO Go for another documentary, McMillions on HBO Go. You've seen it?
The guy from the FBI in that is a trip where he tackles the drunk on the beach who's stealing the fake check. It's awesome.
It's well worth checking out if you haven't already. Paul, unmute your mic.
Have you watched the Washington thing on History Channel, the 3-part George Washington kind of acted out documentary?
I have not yet. Is it kind of like there's Netflix series like the Roman Empire? They just did one on the Siege of Constantinople. Is it kind of like that where it's like, dramatized, but it also has like professors and stuff? Yeah, I got to check that out.
Yeah. Bill Clinton's in it even. I thought it was really good. I learned a heck of a lot about early George Washington that I had no idea about, that he was somewhat of a failure as early on as a military man, and how he kind of earned his stripes. I thought it was really good.
I love it. I got to check that out. I'll throw another one out there. Peaky Blinders. Go watch that. And Money Heist, if you're into stuff, foreign languages, some subtitles. They got a 4th season coming out April 3rd, so you can binge it just in time for the 4th season. I think it's excellent.
I fall asleep watching TV, and I fall asleep reading. If you put the two of them together, I'm doomed.
Michael Kist on Twitter, @MichaelKistNFL. Plug the podcast for us.
Yeah, put in Bleeding Green Nation into any podcast app. We'll come right up. We're one of the biggest team brand podcasts in the world, most downloaded, highest rated, all that stuff. And it's not just Eagles stuff either. We do NFL draft stuff. We talk with leading minds around the industry from different analytical companies and former scouts and everything like that. So a lot of stuff going on. Follow me, of course, at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T.
You want to put this down? You want to put this down for next Thursday?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Chad, you're cool with that, right?
Standing reservation. I love it. Every Thursday right here.
Reservation, of course, yeah.
Hey, appreciate it, Michael.
Thanks, guys.
Michael Kist has been our guest. Paul?
The pill conversation is approaching. I'm getting excited. At 1 o'clock, we pick our three pills off of the 16. If you haven't seen the list, you're like the only person in Nashville who hasn't. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Check it out.
I just got a text from a buddy, Chad, that says, tomorrow will you be doing 16 edibles?
And we're staying strictly legal. We're not in Colorado or California.
Pick your edible.
What is funny, though, we're putting all these scenarios that would be good for fans of those teams, all the different ones, if we did a pick your poison and we could do different, like, drugs. Yeah. If you have a needle on one of them, put some meth in there. Put some blow in there, some different things, and you get to pick like bad options for your team. So you have to pick the lesser of the evils.
That's not
for
bad.
Your team. Like one could be like three more years of Derek Dooley for the Vols. Like all these different scenarios to throw out there that are bad.
Either three more years of Derek Dooley for the Vols or more cheesy slogans from Butch Jones forever.
Yeah.
Like one of those, you have to choose one or the other.
That's
more
pretty good.
Barbecues from
We'll do that next week. We could have picked these as shot glasses instead of pills, maybe, if we wanted to put a different twist on it.
I think given the times, pill is more appropriate, probably. Yeah.
No, it's a good borrowed idea.
You take three. You can figure out which three you'd like. We'll go through that coming up at 1 o'clock. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. The show rolls on here on 104.5 The Zone.
From Titans free agency to the draft, no one beats zone coverage. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Crew is all here today. Coming up at 1 o'clock, you can take three pills of the 16 options. We give several solutions, remedies, course of action that you can take, but you can only choose three. You can see all of the options online, Midday 180 on Twitter. Options like UT beats Bama or 5 years of prime Pecorine. Peyton Manning to the Titans. The Predators beat the Penguins. James Franklin stays at Vandy. All of that and more we'll discuss coming up at 1 o'clock. 615-737-1045, our number. Chad, the Commodores, Aaron Nesmith, has declared for the NBA draft. He will hire an agent.
He's going to hire an agent, so that means he will be entering the NBA draft, and there's no backing out, I believe. I know that they made a new rule, some sort of addendum, where I think there's a way you can like kind of hire an agent or speak to an agent and still come back if you're not drafted at all, but he's going to get drafted. I mean, this was something they knew going into it. He has hired an agent. He's going to the draft, and he will not be back at Vanderbilt, which then this is going to start to show the player development that Jerry Stackhouse has been talking so much about, right? Yeah. That's a big key in his program is, I mean, he's almost doesn't seem to like recruiting that much, has not recruited that well so far. This incoming class does not look to be that heralded, but what he's all about is getting players there and developing them. Similar sort of approach that Rick Barnes took early on in his rebuilding job at Tennessee in terms of bringing in players who were less heralded and turning them into NBA prospects and NBA draft picks, like he did with Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. And Jordan Bone was a bit higher of a prospect, but still able to get those guys into the NBA. So that's going to be the key now for Jerry Stackhouse. How do guys like Scottie Pippen Jr. and the players that he's bringing back next year, how are they going to develop to continue to make this program one that's on an upward trajectory? It wasn't hard to be on an upward trajectory based on what he inherited with what Bryce Drew did in that 1 year, but now can they keep that momentum going that's going to be all on off-season conditioning and player development. But we also look around the current climate and landscape and think there's a lot of teams right now that don't have that player development time because of everything going on.
Here's kind of what I'm curious about, Chad. Like, what's the right mix for a school like Vandy in terms of having one and dones or quick turn guys and having conceivably 4-year guys who are developed but probably aren't NBA players? What's the right mix, and do you think they're going to get towards that right mix? Because now they seem to me to feel overly reliant on the one and dones, and they're not. And then if you twist and sprain your knee, or these injuries have been more serious, but they've really had bad luck with their one and dones.
Well, they've only had one and done, that was for sure, and that was Darius Garland, who got hurt obviously and was out for the year. Neesmith getting hurt this year affected him. He was a sophomore player,
so 2 years
in his second year. Neesmith also is a surprise draft pick after 2 years. I think when they brought him in as a 4-star guy from Charleston, South Carolina, he was either high school teammates or AAU teammates with Zion Williamson, I remember, also in that area. But, I don't think they were thinking this guy is going to leave for the NBA draft early. To me, Paul, the right mix at Vanderbilt is to have 0 one-and-dones. Vanderbilt is a school where you get players in that you develop, 3- and 4-star guys. You can recruit well at Vanderbilt to Nashville. Get guys that are going to be there 3 or 4 years at least, and you supplement your roster with grad transfers. I think Vanderbilt is a school and a program that lends itself well to grad transfers. We saw Kermit Davis Hutton do this with the reverse, right? He would get the guy from the big program that wasn't playing,
reverse
and
one
bring them in. Yeah, and bring them in for 1 year at the end of it. I don't think you're doing that at Vandy. You're probably going and getting guys who average 18 or 20 a game from St. Francis, Pennsylvania, to come in as a grad transfer that's got a lot of experience and can immediately help maybe start and plug a gap or add depth to your roster. That's the formula for Vanderbilt recruiting. That's what Jerry Stackhouse wants to do. He's not going after one-and-done guys, and they're not in the living room with one-and-done guys right now. He wants to bring in guys to develop, so we'll see if that works at Vanderbilt right now, where you've got a lot of other programs around the SEC. Now Tennessee being one of them that's bringing in some one-and-dones, which we haven't seen under Rick Barnes.
Saturday would have been SportsFest 2020, but due to the self-distancing going on, we have canceled that event, and tomorrow we bring you the Spirit of Sports Fest. You can tune in all day tomorrow as we show our appreciation for our community with live and local programming, including your favorite shows with very special guests and more. It's the Spirit of Sports Fest. It's brought to you by Paul Winkler, T-Mobile, Tennessee Highway Safety Office, Upscale Mel Spa and Skin Center in Murfreesboro, and it's the Spirit of Sports and Community. It's the Spirit of Sports Fest all day tomorrow on 104.5 The Zone. Tomorrow on the show, Clay Travis joins us, John McClain, plus Austin Price, Philip Fulmer will be on the show, and Louis Tiant, Paul, will be calling in.
That could be really awesome.
El Tiante.
Yankees-Red Sox rivalry of my youth. He was right there.
Stay tuned. Coming up, guys, we get into pill popping.
Perfect. It's time.
Time to discuss the big topic of the day for the show, which is you can choose 3 pills to take, only 3 of the 16 options. Which one are you going with and why? You can hop on the lines at 615-737-1045, our number 737-1045. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.